Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the Outkick Network, this is Outkick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Glad you're with us. Just like that, the final hour is here.
Every day it gets quicker and quicker that we get to that last hour.
So
good feeling.
Today,
peaceful, easy feeling.
What could have happened today on the show is both men to my left and my right would have been sweating it out today. But Judge hit 62 last night.
You're right.
And the Braves won. They clinched the NL East.
Well.
Is this year number five in a row?
Five in a row, okay. Hutton. This is the fifth in a row. I was sweating it out last night watching that game. I watched all of that game last night and was completely into it. And it was one of those games, anyone who's watched any baseball knows these games, where you're playing an inferior team and you're outplaying them, but you strand a village on the bases. And that was the Braves. I think Dansby Swanson, the first six innings, may have stranded nine runners on his own. Oh. Up with bases loaded, second and third, two outs, and the Braves could not push runs home. They're up 2-1 starting in the fifth inning of the game, and they're just holding on for dear life. The Marlins loaded the bases in the eighth, and Minter got the batter to pop out with two outs that ended that threat. And then Kenley Jansen with an easy, rare for him, three up, three down, ninth, and the Braves celebration was on.
I had kind of come to terms with the idea that he wasn't going to get it. And, you know, it's more about the playoffs for me at this stage. I was on my local Nashville radio hit this morning, and they asked me about my confidence level, thinking I was going to be great. And I was like, they said, is this the year? And I, no.
For the Yankees?
No. Yeah. I have no faith in Cole. Like I said to Johnny Damon, he's going to give up home runs, not be like an ace.
But he went through that stretch where he was great. He turned things around after the start. And he went about 2 months, correct me if I'm wrong here, where his starts were very consistent.
I mean, he set the team strikeout record, beat Ron Guidry, my favorite all-time pitcher, but
he's still
he just
up the homers.
Gives up these damn home runs. And Tyone, who's their fourth pitcher, is like third in giving up home runs. And I just think in tight games, they're going to give up too many home runs. Their bullpen, Chapman, can't be on the bullpen roster, but he might be because they've got all these injuries. I just don't have the faith that they're going to kick it in gear. I think they'll win the first series, which would be against Cleveland if the seeding holds.
Okay.
Cleveland
but
plays.
Unless somebody beats the Astros in the other series.
It's Cleveland.
Tampa.
Tampa, right. Yeah.
I don't want Tampa either. I want Cleveland. Tampa scares me. But I think they'll get through that series. I don't think they'll get through the Astros.
It should
Astros
be a fun playoff play run for both sides.
Well, the Braves will be playing either St. Louis or Philly, so that's going to be a very compelling series with either one of those two teams. So, yeah, it was nerve-wracking last night. And I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking it's a situation where I'm pulling for my team, but part of me is also thinking, Marlins, can you just be the Marlins and stop putting up a fight? There's nothing to play for. You are a day away from hitting the golf course. Please stop putting up a fight.
They want to win one for their outgoing manager.
Yeah.
What becomes of him? What becomes of Don Mattingly?
Is it weird? I really like him.
I really like him too. He's one of my favorite players.
If I'm on his roster or in his lineup, or if I'm in the in the stands where I know they've struggled to get attendance there, but they have for years. I love that manager. He's always taking up for his players. He gets thrown out maybe too much, and he stirs the pot some.
But he's not getting another job, is he?
Is he hard to play for? I mean, I
don't
guess it's not a fun
for.
Environment.
No, I've never heard that about him. I mean, he just had really bad rosters. I mean, it's tough to blame a guy that, you know, has not had a ton of talent.
How does he not get another job?
And the talent
job,
they
then,
get
if that's
is,
the case.
Is shipped out. You know, I mean, he's not getting another job because they never win. But it's also, is it his fault they don't win? Or is the fact that the Marlins, whenever they get young talent, they get rid of them, and they just haven't been able to hold
on
to
them. But also, I think what you're looking for in a manager now is a guy who's going to execute the analytics of the front office. And is I don't know how Miami's operated. I don't know anything about them. But is Don Mattingly taking a job to execute the analytics of the front office?
He's a baseball guy.
I mean,
I don't know.
He was good enough for Jeter.
Yeah.
I think Jeter wasn't running I don't suspect Miami was operating that way, and I suspect that's part of why Miami sucks.
Maybe. Like, what's the analytical aspect of what we're seeing from Snitker in Atlanta? He's one of the older guys.
Yeah, he's just kind of an old school, just put him out there, let him go play. You know, they're not going to put a lot of pressure on
They're not doing the analytics from the top-down thing, are they?
A degree? How about my stat yesterday and the Braves pulled off of sacrifice bunt last night? Game 161. They were one game away from being the first team in Major League history to not lay down a sack bunt.
Michael Harris?
I believe it was Michael Harris, who I said the night before tried to bunt once, popped it back.
That's what I was asking.
And then swung away. But he laid a perfect bunt down.
That's amazing.
One of the cool, like, human aspects of last night was the reaction. Chad, correct me if I'm wrong. It was, I believe, Odorizzi in the dugout.
Yes.
And
who was great?
He was with Charlie Morton.
Who's not been good since he got traded from the Astros, the Braves. He was terrific last night.
And he was with Charlie Morton.
Yep.
Okay.
And they were teammates together in Houston.
And you could tell he felt the pressure of that game.
Yes.
And that the fact that they pulled that off when what has been a struggle for him since he was traded, I mean, he's wiping away some tears. You got Morton there, like, not consoling him, but like telling him, like, dude, this is now you. This is what we can do now moving forward. We're going to win with you. And I think the win, I'm curious to follow him now in the postseason, because that win and being able to clinch the way they did with him on the mound, now we get to see if that pays off now with some confidence.
Charlie Morton is one of the best guys in baseball. Everyone who's covered him, has played with him, just loves Charlie Morton. He was right there talking to Odorizzi. It was a funny moment because that happened an inning before where he was in his ear talking to him. Then in the last inning, Odorizzi's almost like praying out loud, but he's got a bead of sweat coming down his face, and he's kind of looking up and pacing when Kenley Jansen's in there in the last inning. And right behind him, we talk about opposite ends of the spectrum, you've got rookie Vaughn Grissom, not a care in the world, the second baseman who came in and homered, you know, in his first game at Fenway Park. And he's just chatting it up and laughing with someone, you know, right next to him. They're joking about whatever's going on. And Odorizzi looks like he's about to die.
So how do the matchups stack now for the Braves?
Braves
get the winner of
Philly and St. Louis.
Okay,
so that's going to be a good series. Basically, they avoid the Dodgers until the NLCS.
And if the Dodgers Braves would do, get the Mets if the Mets
the
win.
Braves do what the Braves should do.
So you can't play the Mets and the Dodgers, which is good. I would
you're going to get the winner of the Mets Dodgers
if the Mets
if the Mets beat the Padres.
Okay,
so Padres in at Citi Field against the Mets.
And who do you fear the most? The Dodgers, I would imagine.
Philly is in St. Louis for three games.
And who do you fear the most?
The Dodgers.
Yeah, Dodgers are. Just,
but outside of the Dodgers,
Mets would be super Mets, tense.
Yeah, the Mets feel like a team that would probably choke
but it's a game seven
against
series.
The Braves. But I don't want to see DeGrom and Scherzer and Bassett.
And they've got revenge.
And Bassett's the ERA leader in the National League is their third starter.
It's a hell of a challenge. That'd
speaking
be a hell
of analytics, though, Michael McHenry will be on tomorrow. And what he does for the Pirates and a lot of the Bally Sports and other networks is he dives in analytically and will give pitching matchups or where he thinks a series will be determined within a lineup outside of the norm, outside of like Aaron Judge and what he does at the plate. He'll be bringing that aspect to us tomorrow with his analysis. So I'm eager to see how he sets this up with the stats behind the analysis as the playoffs will get started on Friday. And just going back briefly to Odorizzi, what was at stake there? Like, was he worried about not being a part of the playoff roster or something? Like, it looked like he saved his job in what someone described it to me as, this is a guy who at times didn't deserve a spot. He was so bad. And yeah. I don't know if it was really to that extent, but like, it looked like a guy that just earned a roster spot in the final preseason game of the NFL.
Well, look, he got traded. He was going to be a late rotation starter, and he was. And he's just been bad for the Braves all year. So this was him being placed into a big moment where you don't want to go into that final day having to pitch Max Fried on an afternoon game and risk if you lose, you could completely collapse in the final three games. So it was a big moment for him. It's 1-0 Braves early. They had a chance for more. He gives up a solo home run. It's 1-1. And that was it. I think he pitched into the six, maybe five or six complete innings. He was really good. So I think it was more Hutton of, you're new to this team that won the World Series. By the way, won the World Series against his team a year ago, the Astros. You don't want to be the one that comes in and messes up anything. So there's a lot of pressure in that moment when you're the new guy that joins the team midseason. I think he was feeling some of that. But he delivered last night in a pretty pressure-packed situation.
He's not going to be talked about much, but I was thinking about him last night because I heard Judge's comments on the pressure. Like he was also looking at the schedule. He knew what was at stake trying to hit 62, and there was relief post-game with that, and you could see the relief without even needing to talk to him from the Braves dugout, too.
He had a good line, Judge. He said everybody could sit down and watch a game now.
Yeah, including him today.
Yeah. Now it's his turn to sit down and watch also. Hey, one other comment on the post-game celebration with champagne that I watched. I watched probably way too much of it last night.
Yeah.
They're going into the clubhouse for the Braves celebration. Kelly Kroll, who's the sideline reporter for the Braves, they sent her to Miami to take part in the celebration. If you're going to get the big ski goggles for the celebration, put them on.
Would she have them up on her forehead?
She had them up on her forehead. Matt Olson, star first baseman for the Braves, has his up on the forehead during the interview. It's almost like, people that would wear the mask and take them off for the interview. They took off the goggles for the interview.
And then
someone came doused. Out talking just immediate into the eye of Matt Olson, champagne.
Which stinks. This is why you wear the glasses.
Let's not injure someone's eye before the playoffs in this celebration. But she never put them on. She just had them on her head, which looks equally ridiculous as putting them on camera, right? Like, I understand, like, you're okay. I'm on camera. I'm looking at the camera. It's normally uncovered. But you've got these enormous ski goggles on. Put them on your eyes. Save yourself from the champagne. It was driving me nuts watching her with the goggles on her forehead and not on her eyes the whole time.
You have players in there that are on the lookout for people not wearing the goggles.
Right. Exactly.
That's who you see.
Well, she was getting – I mean, she had a champagne bath just like everyone else.
Yeah, if you walk in there
– But she's got to keep them on.
You run onto the playing surface and Bobby Wagner sees you, watch out. You walk into that locker room and you want to stay dry, you're screwed.
I respect the hustle. I respect the game. She's staying professional. She's saying, I'm going to present my face to the camera like a reporter would.
Which is my job.
But I'm also thinking, if you're going to put the goggles on your head, you've already taken down a layer of professionalism that you would normally have
so
on camera.
So then go all the way.
Just put them on your eyes. It's not going to distract me at all, more than them being on top of your head, which is more distracting because now you're getting hit in the face with champagne and the goggles that can protect you are on your head.
I would love to hear a comment from her on this. I would love to hear her hindsight this.
Davey, let's reach out to Kelly Kroll and see if we can get her on. I'd love to go through the intricacies of the champagne celebration.
The thought process and the execution and then the hindsighting.
I think that she's going to be gettable because she's got a whole offseason now. Bally Sports will not be having any of these games, so she's done. I believe they all go away from Bally Sports, so she's into her offseason.
Post-game show.
I'm sure she's still working. I'm joking, kind of. But
yeah, she's about to not be seen because she'll be doing
what I'm saying is
pre and post.
She's got a,
so she can wear the glasses on her forehead all she wants now.
Fair enough.
She's doing a lot of Atlanta. What is the Atlanta United? What's the team there?
Soccer. Now
they actually have a big audience.
They have big crowds. I don't know what the TV 70,000 audience is like. Yeah.
Big crowds in the SEC. SEC attendance figures. 11 of the 14 programs average at least 95% capacity after 5 weeks. Mississippi State.
Can I guess?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. Do you guys want to
guess? Vandy Nutheim.
Yeah, let me start with Mississippi State.
That's why I hesitated because I was like, if we're going to guess,
I got Vandy.
Vandy's
last.
So only one more.
Ole Miss, he was
Missouri.
Bemoaning.
I always guess anyone with a rock formation in their end zone is probably not great in attendance.
So,
Are
you surprised that Ole Miss is not on this list, considering how much Kiffin has talked about it through five games?
It's more of a student body issue, I think. So, no.
They're at least 95% capacity.
They
the programs
it by
who
percentage.
Are not. Mississippi State, 85.5% capacity. Missouri's 84.7%. Vanderbilt's 55.2%. Georgia, by the way, the only program averaging 100% stadium capacity. That also surprises me.
Yeah, what have? Who did Bama host that nobody went to?
Well, just the fact that
they hosted so many national titles that.
Yeah, but Saban is critical if they're blowing out an opponent and the student section leaves.
Yeah,
that surprises me. And then Tennessee sold out Akron.
Yeah.
But did not the week prior. It was close to capacity. But again, it's 100%.
Yeah, we were there. It looked pretty full, but it was not a sellout. I didn't want to say it was like 96,000 out of 101 or whatever it is.
I have a different attendance question. Forgive me if I'm getting the details wrong. I had COVID at the time, which excuses everything.
Brain fog.
Middle Tennessee, the week after the huge win over Miami.
Yes.
Had a quote-unquote blackout. And I saw pictures of it. And it's ridiculous to have a blackout when you have that many fans coming to a game. So there are small groups of people
that's their
dressed,
big night
dressed
game.
In black.
Yeah, it's not
scattered around the stadium. Like they bunch up at least.
You got to wait
but
to see
But you can't
the
have a blackout if you're having
before you do that.
That kind of attendance.
Well, they do
which
it.
I don't blame them. I understand their attendance woes, but why would you have a blackout?
I mean, I mean,
it's
you know where I
come Friday night game.
I'm not having gray uniforms. I'm not wearing black uniforms. If my primary colors are blue and white, like that's my program. You know, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I buying anything that's outside of my school colors uniform.
But also, unless you're having an occasion where you know your stadium is going to have some kind of major attendance, I think you just set yourself up to be goofed on when somebody sends out a picture of, look at Middle Tennessee's blackout, and there are a few people over here in black and a few people over there in black.
Yeah.
All that it does is the empty seats account on Twitter gets the goof on.
Well, I mean, empty seats can also look down to Hard Rock Stadium, where that win was no fluke against Miami, and they destroyed them.
No, that was terrific.
Where Michael Irvin told Eddie George no comment the other day.
Did he really?
Yeah, he was like, "We're on to conference play." You know, it's not a great start for Mario Cristobal. Look,
by the way, the attendance for the Middle game may have been better in Murfreesboro than it was for Miami against Middle. Did you see the crowd for that game?
Yeah, there was a weather delay there too.
Yeah,
but yes,
there was no one there in the second half.
UCLA could, you know, they could use the marketing strategy of Middle Tennessee as well based on their crowd.
Yeah,
they've been struggling, but they've been also a surprise this year. I was stunned that they beat Miami the way they
did. That's terrific. Program building moment.
Guys, when we come back, let's get into some coaches on the hot seat across the NFL. We're each going to just make our proclamations on who's out now, like either during the year or right after the season. How many job openings do we see based on the pressure and the need to win immediately for certain guys in the NFL? We will also get to some accolades and awards from week 4 across the league. And we will look ahead to the college football and NFL matchups this weekend. It's all coming up on Outkick 360.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Coming up in 15 minutes, NFL Awards. You can read the column at outkick.com. I have a new MVP. Breaking news alert there. Overreaction for the hot seat. I don't think we're going to overreact at all to this. In fact, I think many of the same coaches that we'll list off here in the NFL, we've already eliminated with our teams for the playoffs. That tells you where we stand with them. And I think many of us will have some crossover here.
There's definitely some crossover.
So here's our premise. We're telling you as of October the 5th who we think will not be on a coaching staff and will be possibly looking for another job or just out of where they currently are, fired by the end of the season, if not during the season. And I'm listing off 5 that immediately come to mind for me, and I'm starting with Cliff Kingsbury because I think it's one or the other, and they've I know they've extended him. I've got some coaches on here who have been extended this offseason. Kingsbury's facing a lot because of the expectations now with what they've been building. They're about to get Hopkins back into the lineup. I think they're 2 weeks away from that. And they've paid their quarterback. They have upgraded at certain positions. They think they've drafted well on defense, and it's time to win. They have not closed seasons well in recent years, and we know the controversy that took place all offseason. I think Kingsbury's out in Arizona. Matt Rhule, I think we knew he was fired before the season even started, and that was with Baker Mayfield getting there and having a chance to prove himself in a prove-it year. Mike McCarthy is quietly doing okay because of Cooper Rush. I think the controversy starts for him whenever Dak Prescott gets healthy and things don't go nearly the way that people think it will whenever he comes back, because then the quarterback controversy starts, and he really needs Dak to play well in order to keep his job, because the defense, while it's going to hold up and be very good, I think when Dak gets back, they're going to open up the offense a bit more, allowing for more turnovers, and we'll see how the offensive line also holds up. I don't think Dak's going to grip the football all that well. It's not I don't hate the guy as a quarterback. I just don't think the mechanics of his throwing hand will help.
Wasn't
this process.
Steve Young we talked about was big on that with the same injury, Steve, saying he could not grip the ball?
And I'll also just add in, we know Jerry Jones wants to win, and it's been a while, and he's not getting any younger. And he's been patient with McCarthy. I think he's out. Frank Reich, you guys know where the soapbox I was on all offseason. I think he faces way more pressure than what many people on the outside looking in think. And Irsay, after this season, he's not going to be able to point to Carson Wentz. And if he continues to point at the Titans, he's out. Frank Reich's out. And Ron Rivera spent too much time releasing statements with Washington this past offseason, while his owner is not technically the day-to-day owner. And they're not that good. There's only so much they're going to put up with, and I think they have a new head coach there. What do you guys think of the initial list?
I think
it's good.
The most surprising name on the list is Ron Rivera in terms of his established career up until he got that job, and the job I thought he would do there, and he has not done. I'm not disagreeing with it.
He's a good stabilizer.
He's on the list for me, too.
I like Ron Rivera.
I think he might go somewhere else to stabilize.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the quarterback thing. We talk about Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
Ryan Tannehill could go somewhere and stabilize an organization as a quarterback.
Stabilize, but does not elevate.
Yeah.
Both those
Rivera
guys
Rivera could go
elevate.
Stabilize a bad organization, another bad organization, but he's not elevating Washington right now.
Chad.
My list? Let's get to my list. My list, Hutton, there's going to definitely be some crossover between the two of us. So we're doing this once a month, right, Davey? This is going to be a once-a-month exercise? Okay.
Look how thin.
Yeah. I thought I was going to have a fifth on here. Maybe not.
You like
So you have four out.
You like everyone.
Hutton's got five. I've got four. Cliff Kingsbury, same reasons you said, Hutton. It's going to be him or Kyler Murray. And I believe it's going to be Cliff Kingsbury that's going to get the heave-ho and not the franchise quarterback.
Paul, I don't want to steal your thunder here, so maybe I should wait on the question. I'll wait, because I want to have a conversation on Kingsbury on how he saves his job.
Okay. Matt Rhule, I don't believe, is going to save his job, can save his job. He's got a quarterback situation now that seems to be beyond repair. We talked about it earlier. Baker Mayfield getting there so late has not helped anything. His turnovers have not helped anything. It's not even a quarterback controversy because they have no real good option to go behind Mayfield. So it's a mess in Carolina. Matt Rhule is lining up right now for the Wisconsin or Nebraska job. That is what he's doing. He's going to get offered one of them, I'm willing to bet. Was a great college coach. He probably needs to go back to college football and try to reclaim his career there. Frank Reich, they've been a disaster this year. By any metric of anticipation for this season and predictions of what this team should be. The offensive line that's the highest paid in football, that's got the highest paid guard in football, is not any good. Jonathan Taylor, their best player, not always clutch. The Matt Ryan experiment, much like most of their experiments with one-and-done mercenary quarterbacks, not going well. They lost 24-0 in Jacksonville. They lost 24-17 at home to what's been a bad Titans team so far this year. Frank Reich, this is it. I think Jim Irsay is done, and this will be his final year as head coach in Indy. And Ron Rivera, the Commanders have been one of the worst teams in football. We just got done talking about it. Great at stabilizing things, not great at elevating things. And once again, he's proving that. Those are my four guys right now. Let me give you a little preview of next month's list also.
Okay.
If the Indianapolis Colts go to Denver and win on Thursday, I'm not going to need to wait a month. Thursday night at midnight, that list will be updated to include Nathaniel Hackett of the Broncos. That will be one and done and out. He will be added to my list if they lose that game.
And I wonder if that's where Paul's going.
That is where Paul is going.
Okay.
Nathaniel Hackett is not making it out of this season.
Wow.
It's not just that he's not particularly good and that the Broncos will not be good this season. He was hired by the Bolin Family Trust, and the Bolin Family Trust is out. The Walmart family is in. They're going to want their own guy. And I wonder if they wouldn't try to...
We're going to put him on clearance.
I wonder if they wouldn't try to interject themselves in the Sean Payton deal here, though that's not Sean Payton's region of the country. But they're the richest owners in the league now.
By far, if
Sean Payton is interested in hearing the biggest financial offer he could get, it could come from Denver, though Jerry can certainly compete. I meant to put Mike McCarthy on this list.
Okay.
I think that things will go south in Dallas, kind of for what you were hinting at or talking about, Hutt. I think Dak coming back will serve to complicate things. It's a defensive football team that needs to play the style it's been playing. I think they'll wind up losing out to Philadelphia. They could make the playoffs. They'll lose quickly like they always do. The days of sticking with Dave Campo for a long time.
Jason Garrett.
And Jason Garrett for a long time. I mean, Jerry's getting up there. He needs to win it and win it soon. And so I think that the Peyton carrot will be just too big for him to resist. And if he can get him, he's going to get him, and that's going to be the number one reason for getting rid of McCarthy, never mind McCarthy's shortcomings. Kingsbury, we've covered. Matt Rhule, we've covered. Frank Reich, we've covered. I'm surprised Rivera hasn't been able to do more in Washington, and I think it's probably a dysfunctional organization thing as much as anything, and they needed a stable figurehead there, and he's been a stable figurehead there. But if the football's not good enough, the football's not good enough. I don't know where they go from him because they need a guy like him. They just need a guy like him who's also winning more football games. And, I don't trust Daniel Snyder to do any better hiring he or his wife.
I've got two or three questions off this list. Keep the list up, Davey, because I want to go through this. I'm going to end with Kingsbury. Of this list, only Matt Rhule is getting an immediate job, and it'll be in college.
Yep.
You guys agree?
Yes.
So that's where I'm thinking Kingsbury could get back there too. But I haven't heard him mention like I've heard Matt Rhule, which is intriguing to me.
So successful in college.
But he got an NFL job off of it, though. Yeah. Like there's a college feel to why he was hired.
Yeah, he's
right?
got his distinctive offer.
Well, here's an example for you. Would Arizona State right down the road want to hire Cliff Kingsbury if he didn't work out for the Cardinals?
But how do you market it when you
I only want to bring it up because people are automatically like, oh, Matt Rhule's going to be a candidate here. But I never hear Kingsbury, and that's what launched him into the league because he was tied in with the college system. And he was, I mean, he wasn't great, but
he was better at Temple and at Baylor than Kingsbury.
Oh, with Rhule. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested to see the college jobs and how we start to hear both names because the agents will get involved and you'll start to hear names. What would it take? I don't think Matt Rhule saves his job. I don't think that Frank Reich saves his job unless they're winning the division. I don't think getting in the seventh seed and losing in the wild card round saves his job. You could probably say the same for Mike McCarthy. I don't know. There's just a vibe with ownership with Irsay that I don't think he goes back the day after they're eliminated if they make the playoffs in one game and says, you know what, we're on the right track
here. Is there something else you can point at? It depends on how, given that scenario, seventh seed, first round loss. Is there something else he can blame?
So
the way he could blame Wentz.
Well, the first round, loss would be the Chiefs to the Bills.
There's nothing they could point to about the future getting a lot better. Because they've got an aging quarterback once again in this one and done deal. They're not going to have a high draft pick to go draft a quarterback at that point if they're the 7th team in the playoffs. So that's the issue. There's nothing positive to point to in the near future if you're Indy.
Maybe Rivera's the answer. Maybe Frank Reich's the answer. But Kingsbury, I think he can save his gig. I don't know about Hackett yet. There's still a lot to be determined.
I think
there.
A playoff berth could save Kingsbury's gig.
And the fact that he's getting Hopkins back and how good Murray and Hopkins have been early in the seasons. I know they failed miserably down the backstretch, and I know Hopkins was hurt for the playoffs last year. But when he comes back, do they just pick up where they've left off to start years?
Look, they're afloat. They're 2-2 in a division that's all 2-2.
Yeah, and they went on the road, and that was a big game to go on the road and win at Carolina. It was
game they had to win.
Had to win it, and now they've got it, and now they start to they're about to go through a track here where let me pull up their full
look.
Schedule.
These other ones, there's something in evidence for all of them. Kingsbury, we're all projecting.
Yes.
We're all projecting things are going to go bad. And they haven't gone as badly as we projected because without Hopkins, we thought it would be crap early. Who else did they beat? I don't know. Carolina's not much of a win, but it's the kind of game you've got to win.
They beat the Raiders. Remember that weird overtime game?
They beat the Raiders, and I think we all think that the Raiders are pretty bad. So, they're doing what they need to do right now, but that's much more of a forecasting pick that things are going to go south than these other ones. And you guys aren't with me on Hackett yet. But we're consensus on Rule, Chad. Reich, and Rivera, and that's largely
Chad's with you.
Bad stuff. Chad's almost
I'm with you.
Me.
He just hasn't been technically put on my list yet.
So just looking at the Cardinals' quick schedule here, just October. They're hosting the Eagles this week.
Loss.
Agreed. They will then travel to Seattle. That
is a big
That's
game.
A pivot game for both franchises. The loser, I think, of that game probably ends up being who we thought they were.
Yeah,
Geno
I'd take
Smith
Seattle
or
right now.
Yeah, me too. Then they're hosting the Saints, who are better than their record, but they're still not that good. You know what I mean?
Defensively could be a problem. They're not that good.
I think about the Saints the same way I think the talk was about the Titans at 0-2, where if they're 1-1 and the kick is good in week one to win it, the talk is not as detrimental. And last week in London, you have the double doink, and if they hit it, they win it. Cardinals then go on the road against the Vikings. Then they're hosting Seattle. So they've got two games against Seattle over the next month.
Those.
And then they're facing two good teams in the Saints and the Vikings, Saints defense and Vikings offense.
They could go 2-2 there.
And then they're alive. And then, again, you're working your way in through a wild card break.
And then Hopkins is back.
And if you finish the season strong, which is what we're trying to set up here.
And they haven't.
If you do that,
that would be a reversal of everything they've done at Kingsbury too. Yeah, finishing strong,
but the start would be okay.
And you feel like you've got momentum, and you've turned the corner on, choke jobs.
Yeah.
However,
it could start 4-4.
If it starts around Thanksgiving, if things go crazy on the Cardinals here to me, you've got the 49ers, Chargers, Patriots around the holidays. If it starts to take a turn, this is an organization that will point fingers. Arizona. They did it last year. Murray and Kingsbury pointed at each other.
What's Kime's contract? Because Kingsbury got the extension.
They extended both, I think, at the same time.
They extended both? Yeah. That will reduce the finger pointing a little bit if those two weren't on the same track.
No, I'm not saying the GM and the head coach. I'm saying quarterback and the head coach. Yep. Yeah. Where, they were joking, but they let Murray call some plays in the preseason
to show him how hard it was. There was the study clause in the contract.
Exactly.
All that stuff. That all comes back up.
Call of Duty.
That comes back up. If they don't finish strong this year, I think they're going to be alive for a bit. So although all three of us are going to have Kingsbury on our lists, and I don't disagree with it at all, I think he's going to be fired. I think he's the one that I would point to that can save his job just based on the schedule and the way they can finish the season.
I like the Arizona State idea. I mean, he's got the charisma.
Colorado.
If he's willing to go out and recruit himself.
I don't want anybody coaching Colorado based on
you want no coach?
How bad it's been.
You want a no coach team? Captain's coach?
I would not want to be a coach. I wouldn't want to be Cliff Kingsbury knowing I'm going to try to turn around a program where other coaches have gone to die.
Well, wouldn't you sooner go be a quarterback coach in the league?
You don't revive your coaching resume there.
Wouldn't you sooner go be a quarterback coach in the NFL than go coach Colorado?
Or go be a top-notch college offensive coordinator for someone, which he could get that job easily, for a top program that's in need of a coordinator.
Yeah, I think it takes a special circumstance for somebody to go coach.
It's hard to know what he sees himself as, though. Matt Rhule, if this doesn't work out, I'm sure is going to see himself as a college coach. Cliff Kingsbury, I don't know. It didn't really work out at Texas Tech. Well, his alma mater did for a time.
And with Matt Rhule, he took the big money. Yeah. You know, he took the money and he turned down other jobs because the offer was he didn't have full control of his staff. He turned down the Jets.
Yes.
And Matt Rhule took the Panthers job because he had full control and he got the money. He got, what, $8 million or something annually?
Controversial contract that the other owners were pissed off about.
So to Chad's point, he's like, I don't know what Kingsbury is, college, pro. Rhule's a college coach who took the money to go coach in the NFL and has an easier schedule, and no one would blame him for that. But he got college money to go to the Panthers. Kingsbury didn't. He's probably making what he was making. He didn't get upper echelon,
no,
you know, $10 million college salaries.
He doesn't have that kind of an owner.
Right. But he took the he leveled up when he probably shouldn't have. But he leveled up, and then they drafted Kyler Murray with the number one overall pick in the draft that was held here in Nashville.
I'm asking the question, if it doesn't work out, what's his level down? Is it assistant coach in the NFL? Is it
head coach?
Bad job in college head coach? Because that's what you're going to get.
I think it's that.
I mean, to me, his ceiling is probably Colorado head coach.
Or is it
lower level Power Five?
Or is it Ole Miss whenever Kiffin bolts?
That would make sense.
I mean, that fits.
Yeah.
There are certain programs that fit the vibe
there. That's not too bad of a landing spot.
No.
No. And he can have the same type of success that Kiffin's. I mean, to me, I think of those guys in the same description. You know, Kiffin's a bit more ready to bounce at all times. But social media-wise, Kingsbury's on social media now the way Kiffin was at Tennessee.
Right.
And he would do more.
Yeah, more recruiting for sure.
I think Cliff Kingsbury will have more success in his next iteration as a college head coach than anything in the NFL. Just personally, that's the way and Matt Rhule, it's a no-brainer. He's going to go back to college and be a good head coach again.
And then it becomes fascinating on the next coach at Arizona for Kyler Murray, who they've just invested in.
You want to give you the flip side of that? David Shaw might get fired at Stanford at the end of the year. I think he will be better as an NFL coach
at some
point than in college.
He'd be a good guy for
Washington.
He's
the rare guy that could eventually not flame out. He was great at Stanford for a time. But just time himself out of college, and if an NFL owner gave him a chance, I think he'd be a terrific NFL coach.
I'd put him
coach.
With the Commanders right now.
Yeah.
I like that match. Here's my question. Nebraska, Wisconsin, if you're looking at Rhule, Leonard, Aranda, who I don't think's going to those places. Who's the other name or two that we've
Lance
had
Lance Leipold
there?
From Kansas.
Leipold. How Matt are you Campbell. Stacking that? How attractive is Rhule among those successful college coaches right now?
I mean, if you wanted to hire Dave Aranda, I would hire Matt Rhule for the same reason. He won big at Baylor. And he took over Baylor when they were coming off scandal and got them good pretty quick. And he won at Temple. He'd be a great hire.
Does Carolina hurt? Does the NFL failure hurt him?
No.
Not in college. I don't think so. I think if you're Nebraska or Wisconsin, you'd love to have Matt Rhule. He'd be close to the top of my list.
Hit us up with your thoughts at Outkick360. Coming up, Paul and Chad will tell me where I'm wrong as I list off the accolades after the first month of the NFL season.
Hey, one other thing, too, before we move on from that.
Yep.
Someone else who's not hurt by NFL failure in the end is Bill O'Brien. I think Wisconsin or Nebraska should look at him. Currently the Alabama offensive coordinator. For the job he did at Penn State.
I still think New England should have looked at him for offensive coordinator.
I think Bill O'Brien, though, in the same Bo Pelini vein and then the whole culture of Wisconsin football, I think he works in those places.
He feels in Northeastern those programs. To me.
But it's more of a tough-minded thing. Like, Bo Pelini feels Northeastern to me, but he's from Youngstown, Ohio,
right,
in his demeanor. So it works. I mean, it worked for a while there in Nebraska, even though they didn't
want
to believe
it worked. What does Bill O'Brien want? I want to know what Bill O'Brien wants.
That's a good question.
This is Outkick 360.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Outkick.com is where you can go for NFL Awards watch in week four.
Funny break conversation.
Snuck that one on.
Jalen Hurts is, I think, now the best player. He's the most valuable player through four games. He's been consistent. He is making the players around him better. Those players were already really good. He is making them better, and he's distributing the football well. They are running the football at a high clip. I like the dual threat aspect, and for all of the haters on Jalen Hurts, it's tough to find a reason not to buy into the Philadelphia Eagles now, because this is the first time since he's been a professional that he's had the same play caller in a consecutive season. So I think you see the comfortable aspect of what he's being asked to do, and I think even more so we can see where the organization is very comfortable with him. And again, they've put the playmakers around him, much like we've saw in Miami. I've also added Patrick Mahomes to the list. I've hesitated to put mainly because I think the other guys like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have been really good. I've added Mahomes in. Jackson's out, and I put Allen back in this week. Mahomes is back because he makes things look so effortless, and he's playing at an MVP caliber rate right now in Kansas City.
I'm buying Hurts.
Yeah, most surprising entry, and I've read your column, Hutton, most surprising entry this week is definitely Hurts, because he was the guy, we were pointing to those Tua and Hurts, the quarterbacks that, hey, yeah, there's no excuses now. Let's see who goes
Zach
out
Wilson
and plays. Yeah, let's see who goes out and plays well. Zach Wilson, one game in, 1-0.
Daniel Jones.
Made it work in the end. Not a great stat line, but it was good in the end. So, yeah, I like Hurts on that
list. I'm buying Hurts, except I didn't buy him on the Manning cast.
Yeah, he was not a good Manning cast guest. That was not great.
That's 2 weeks in a row I flipped away from the Manning cast. With last year, I said I was absolutely devoted to and all in.
You know, the problem is he's one of those guys, he's too cool.
Yeah, he's a little too cool.
Too quiet, cool, like so calm and collected. It doesn't lead to a great guest or conversation because he's just so chill about everything.
And the week before, not chill, Tracy Morgan just had no concept of waiting, that there was a little bit of a delay, and they were stepping all over each other. It was just a car crash.
From a timing perspective, John Hamm was the best at understanding the delay and just allowing it to breathe for a second and then knowing when to get in and out of plays and talk about it. It was a good balance of talking about the game and watching the game together, but telling stories.
I do find it a little annoying that the major sports network has a major program with the Mannings, and in order for a guest to be good, he has to understand the delay element.
But
in
it's 2022. It's hit or miss. They always have one that's got the right setup. They had Jimmy Johnson on, who's on Fox, and he had the perfect setup at his home and wherever he is in South Florida, where he had it on time. Jalen Hurts was on time. There was a camera setup, you could tell.
Yeah.
In his, so there was no delay with
Oftentimes
that.
Oftentimes it's a consideration, though, and it seems to me, technologically speaking, they should be above and beyond
Steph
that.
Curry was on his own when he was on Monday night, and then John Hamm was on his own, you could tell, because there was more of a delay.
I think I'm done putting up with it. When it's a thing like it was for Tracy Morgan, I'm out.
Yeah,
and I really want
to
be in.
It depends on the game, but I prefer to just watch those interviews on YouTube later, and then...
Yeah, that's the good thing about it, is you can get the highlights with awful announcing.
Yeah.
Or someone you follow on Twitter will give you the funniest things that happen over the course of
this
night.
This is like one of those categories that we could spend time on. Like something that I was in on and I was sure I would always be in on, then all of a sudden I'm out.
See, I still like it because it's the only, but I wouldn't like it with anything else. It's very weird. It goes against what I normally would like to watch.
I don't
which
want
is
guests.
The game with the game
no,
broadcast.
I enjoy when it's just them.
But it's fun when it's just them because you almost sink into it. You don't even know that you're a part of the conversation, but you're watching it and it just feels like everyone's in the living room when it's just
the
them
two
talking.
Of them talking football and taking some shots at each other and pointing stuff out to you, but then the guests bog it down.
So the last 2 weeks now, based on this injury report, it appears as though Brady was at practice today. He didn't practice because he's on the injury report.
Well, this divorce is going to change everything.
But, you know, he wouldn't be on the injury report today. If he's allowed off, they wouldn't add him today, would they?
Well, if he's not there, I think they have to acknowledge it in the injury report in some way, shape, or form. Say, not injury related.
Well, this is injury related, is what they're saying. He's got a right shoulder issue and a right finger injury.
Which he said on Jim Gray, the shoulder.
So he did not practice for the Bucs. Tomorrow, plenty of discussion for college football. We'll dive in with the NFL as well. Trey Wallace and Armando Salguero will join us. Plus, Michael McHenry previews Major League Baseball in the postseason. That's all on OutKick 360 starting at 2 Central.
Good job, everybody. Don't block the box. Please lock your locks. See ya!